Well, not surprisingly, the phones are full for Fred Burton, but we'll try and get a line for you coming up. Went to his website by going to coasttocoastam.com, and it's shut down. The website's shut down. So we'll have to ask Fred who shut down the Strat4 website. Well, not surprisingly, the phones are full for Fred Burton, but we'll try and get a line for you coming up. Went to his website by going to coasttocoastam.com. And it's shut down. The website's shut down. So we'll have to ask Fred who shut down the Strat4 website. Could he have been the victim of a digital assassination? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So, Fred Burton, what did coasttocoastam.com listeners do to your website?
I don't know. I'm unaware of that. I sent a note to our IT folks letting them know. I don't have any explanation for that.
Okay. Could just be that, as sometimes happens, we have a tendency to melt things down. If we would go to it all at once, we could have seized it up that way. Or have you ever, are you, as now even with the shadow CIA, are you fighting other organizations out there like a shadow Mossad? Or a shadow KGB?
No, Ian. We aren't. There's a lot of individuals that are providing geopolitical analysis and economic intelligence and so forth around the globe. And our company likes to think that we're first rate at our ability to do that. And so we really don't believe that we have any competitors in this space that does exactly what we do, which is a nice niche to be in.
Well, I like that, but I mean, do you have to worry about any other shadow agencies trying to combat you from other countries coming after you for the information that you have?
Well, on a personal level, I'm very careful. I always have been. I've done a tremendous amount of work, for example, recently on border violence and the narco problem in Mexico. And that in many ways, worries me more simply because of the capabilities of some of the cartels to reach into the United States using some of the criminal elements that are here in gangs. I think that in many ways they're much more violent and much more capable to some degree. But a host nation to target individuals, for example, they really need a good reason, and usually it's in the preemptive front, solely based on either a terrorist planning some sort of adverse act. Or something along that vein.
Don is in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Fred Burton. The new book is called Chasing Shadows, not available until Tuesday, but everybody should go buy it. Hey, Don?
Yeah, Ian?
Go ahead. You're talking to Fred.
Okay. Yes, sir. I know you deal mostly in international matters, but I had a question on a domestic issue. Ian, are you or Mr. Burton familiar with the D.C. Madam case?
Sure. We had her on the air several times. I had her on not long before she was found dead in that shed in the backyard in Florida.
Well, that's what I found pretty suspicious, that she would have hung herself. I heard it on the news, and it got about a 30-second spot on the news and never heard anything else about it.
And the rumor here, just to finish, just for people who don't know the story, she was connected to and had a prostitution ring that involved senators and congressmen. And she had a book, a collection of names, and she was threatening to release all of those names. And that was the connection that was being made to, that she was sort of snuffed out, right? Is that where you're going with that, Don?
Yes, sir. About a few weeks later, she was found hanging in her garage.
Yep.
And I just wanted to get Mr. Burton's take on that. If, is it possible that our government could target an individual to save their reputation?
Well, I think anything's possible. I'm not familiar with the actual details surrounding that case. I've not followed it in granular data. you know, depending upon her clientele, you have to, when I see these kinds of cases like that, obviously it would be fascinating to look at her list of clients and
sure.
think about it in context of what value she could be to an intelligence service, predominantly a foreign intelligence service such as the Russians, like if she has U.S. government clients or congressmen or senators or whatever, that you know, is a fairly long track record of intelligence agencies, specifically the KGB, of using those kinds of persons for that.
Yeah, although the opposite could be true, too, because this was on our shores, that she could have been luring, you know, foreign agents and diplomats into the prostitution and then recording them and being able to blackmail them back to their own country. So that could cut either way. I will tell you, I had her on the show twice, I believe, for whole shows, much like we're doing right now. I found her very engaging. I thought she was actually very sweet. She had a very funny sense of humor. We looked into it. Her family was convinced that she had committed suicide. She had left a note. She had struggled with depression, and she did not want to go back to jail. So, I mean, that's the other side of this, although I appreciate Don's question because it was our question, too. Josie is in Virginia, wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Josie?
Hi, good evening, you all. I wondered if I could ask about three quick questions on whether, Fred, there is a tie-in about the USS Liberty attack and this killing of that Mossad officer. My father was a naval officer, by the way, and a naval aviator. My brother was on the Liberty and one of the 34 killed by, and we've never really made Israel tell us why they did it. That's one thing. It might be an interesting book or follow-up.
Okay. Well, let's get to
that one out. And
let's get to that because there's, well, wait, that's going to be plenty here. Wait, Josie, hang on. That's a lot. So let's get an answer to that right there. What about the USS Liberty? And that does seem to follow, it would follow other things that you talk about in the book and the complicated relationship that we have with Israel and the United States and here bombing our own ship like that. What do you think about that?
Well, first, Josie, certainly want to pass on my sympathies to the loss of your brother. Horrible set of circumstances. I actually came across in the course of my research of this book, there's been some recently declassified Israeli documents that have come out which explain the actual course of events that you may or may not have seen. I'm also associated with a group of the family of Pan Am 103, so I know that these groups do follow these kinds of events, so hopefully I'm not telling you something that you have not seen, but there's actually some radio transmissions that have been released regarding the attack on the USS Liberty. And I'm trying to recall exactly where I found them, and I just don't remember off the top of my head, but Josie, if you want to please reach out to the Coast to Coast staff and pass along some contact information, I would be more than happy to go back through my research and answer you specifically. And I must say that in the course of this book that is coming out this week, I've made a lot of very quiet friends inside the Israeli government, and I'm happy to help you in any way I can as it pertains to that, either putting you in contact with them or dredging up information for you. Over the years, I've been pretty good at that. So
that'd be helpful. Josie's a frequent caller on Coast to Coast and has been on this subject for as long as I can remember taking calls from her about her brother. And so it would be good if you could. And Gina, if you can get that information from Josie on a wild one and then pass that along to Fred Burton later on, that might help get down to the cases on that. And then also your chance to, you had other questions, but we've got so many callers that we really can't do three questions all at once, especially when something as important as the Liberty story. Let's go to John, who's in Ventura, California, on Coast to Coast, west of the Rockies. John?
Fred, how are you? Art, how are you doing?
Hello, John.
I had a question for you, Fred. I had run across something that there will be three world leaders assassinated one by one, and that there'll be two in the Arab world and one in the Western world.
Where'd you get this information, John?
And I was wondering if you knew about that.
Where did you get the information?
This is on the warnings of the second coming.
Ah,
and,
okay.
It's loquacious, given from somebody from Jesus to give out to the world. So,
okay. Care to comment on that, Fred?
I'm not aware of that specific information, though I would strongly encourage you, if you have that kind of data, to bring it to the attention of the FBI and the U.S. Secret Service.
What's the way to approach them on that? Jesus told me to tell you this?
I would simply email them or phone the local field office and bring it to their attention. They do get a lot of calls along these lines on occasion. I'm not specifically aware of this threat, but any threat against a world leader is looked at by the authorities, and you know, threats aren't discounted until there's some database work done and a little bit of follow-up and so forth. So threat information today is taken very, very seriously by the federal law enforcement authorities engaged in the protection of heads of state. Trust me on that.
Are things better or worse with all of the effort that's being put into counterterrorism, with all of the, considering how far things have come from the, you know, the early 1980s when you helped launch the counterterrorism division with the DSS, are things better or worse globally when it comes to the protection of international heads of state and in terms of, you know, teetering on the brink of war?
Things are much better today when it comes to the protection of heads of state, but you have to quantify that predicated on what country they're from. For example, if you look at Muammar Gaddafi today in Libya and how he's protected, it's going to be different than how the president of, say, for example, Sierra Leone is protected on any given day. So that's a relative term depending upon the country of origin. There is nobody that protects heads of state better than the U.S. Secret Service. And they have a tremendous number of resources and assets that are put into play when that happens. People have no concept of what's involved in the national intelligence collection requirements pertaining to threats. And just in our capabilities along those lines, if we pick up threat information, we very rapidly share that with others, even our enemies. I can speak firsthand to that. Threat information as it pertains to people and persons is rapidly disseminated today.
Bob is in Van Nuys, California, on Coast to Coast Wildcard Line for Fred Burton, counterterrorism expert. Bob.
Hey! Wow. Fantastic show and very fascinating tough topic here and guest. I've worked with a company where we deal with presidents, current presidents and ex-presidents. And my particular job that I was doing, it's you get to see some really strange things. Very odd. But anyway, after a while, I made contacts through some other people of, I don't know if you're not national, you're international, right?
I'm sorry?
You're international, Fred?
You're international?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, okay. I don't know if you're familiar, but I used to go around and make contacts with Russian sleeper cells within the United States. And most of them, we had groups of them. I don't know if you're aware of certain groups that are trying to infiltrate our media and entertainment industry, and then we have other groups that are technicals.
How were you assigned to do this? Through what organization, Bob?
I can't say it on here. I'm just letting you know that. I mean, just seeing if you're familiar with this. I made contacts with the technicals. The Russians are trying to acquire information from scientists, people, individuals, and these individuals would actually exchange information with us, and we'd exchange information that was basically on our FOIA list. You know, nothing that that would pose a national security threat, but just enough to get an exchange with them to get information from them. And I was wondering, are you familiar with these operations, Bill?
Yes, I am very familiar with the SVR, efforts to collect technical data here in the United States. And, of course, we had the most recent sleeper cell that was rounded up by the Bureau and deported.
That's correct. The female and her counterparts. Yeah, that's...
When you say you're going to contact them, what are you contacting them for, Bob?
We're basically getting them information to find out their networks, how many they are, how they're operating, how good they are, how talented, what type of techniques they're using. The techniques that they were using were they're actually obtaining people, and they're using hypnosis. And we got them under surveillance, and they're actually conducting hypnosis, placing people under hypnosis, getting information of people who work at places like Lockheed, stuff like that. And it's extremely dangerous when they're doing that.
I bet it would. Is that that sound consistent with your experience, Fred?
I'm not actively engaged in looking for people like this, but I can say firsthand that the Russians have a very active program in targeting predominantly the defense contractor industry, as well as the Chinese. Back to the topic at hand, the Israelis. The Israelis are very, very aggressive at the collection of foreign intelligence.
First-time caller line, Stephen is in Palo Alto, California, on Coast to Coast. Stephen?
Yeah, hi, Ian. Another stunning broadcast. Thank you very much. And to your guest, two questions, please. And if you answer either one of them, I would be greatly appreciative. The first question is, it sounds, if we can just sum this up, that the United States had Israel to stand down, basically, at the time that they were attacked in 1973.
The Yom Kippur War, right.
Right, during the Yom Kippur War. You know, and then it became highly reminiscent, if you will. The same kind of action, at least overtly, was done in Gulf War number one. Right, when Saddam Hussein was firing missiles into Israel, and unlike typical Israeli reaction to aggression, they stood down. President Bush, 41, I remember, and the administration basically had Israel standing down and not firing back. I'm just wondering if there's any relationship to what, Fred, you have discovered, as it were, in your research. In the 73 episode and in Gulf One. That's one question. The other question, if you would prefer to answer this one, is, of course, extremely compelling to ask you, Fred, as to what might be analogous today. That is to say, the Soviet Union apparently was our number one threat, and so hence we would make relationships and alliances and have pacts with our allies, even to stand down.
All right, we're running out of time here, so I'll just ask, thank you, Stephen, I'll ask Fred, one of those questions or both of them quickly?
Well, I think, Stephen, first, those very, very good questions. On your first question, it's very similar to what's occurring today with the rockets coming in from Gaza into Israel, and the Israelis have been extraordinarily restrained with any kind of response that I have seen. And on your second question, I think that if you look at this in context, that there's a lot of similarities, and then bear in mind that this theory was also predominantly one that was held by the wife, and it's extraordinarily difficult to find specific evidence stating that this was exactly what occurred.
All right, very good. We have, as soon as we put down the phone, it rings again. We'll get another one, so we'll get to as many calls as we can this hour for Fred Burton, counterterrorism expert and author now, two books. A great book, Ghost, his first book about launching the counterterrorism division of the DSS. And then this new book drops Tuesday, Chasing Shadows. But I got to ask him, The 9/11 question next on Coast to Coast. We'll go back to your questions, your comments for Fred Burton. Good news. The website, his website, is back up again. I think they did something, switch servers or whatever, because it's back and it's great. So if you're trying to link up to him earlier at coasttocoastam.com, you can now. And if I can, hang out, Jesse, with the music here. Let me just give you an update on this Insta poll from the website. There's two interesting stories this week involving pets in the news, one of which was a local story here in Minnesota. A toy poodle was taken by a bald eagle in a backyard. It happens more frequently in Alaska, where the bald eagles tend to be bigger than the ones we get around here. The dog survived, however, wriggled free, dropped about three stories. The toy poodle will be fine, but the owner was there the whole time watching it happen. Just awful. She describes the big whoosh. She had a Yorkie and I think a toy poodle in the backyard, and she just overheard as the eagle swooped in and grabbed the dog. And then there's this story. There's afterthereapturepetcare.com. Go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and link up to this story about a pet service supposedly designed to assign atheists and other non-Christians to your pet so that when you're raptured coming up here, somebody will be there to feed your dog or your cat. Right now, it's still running roughly 2-1. That the website is a joke. You can go take our Insta poll by going online at coasttocoastam.com. Jesse Ventura is coming up with George Norrie on Monday night, and Jesse's going to be talking about documents, the 63 documents the government doesn't want you to know about. He's also a big believer in the 9/11 conspiracy, and I'm going to ask Fred Burton about that next, too, along with your calls on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's get back to the calls in just one second, but let me ask you, Fred, about this thought, since it seems unlikely maybe to some people in Israel, just as unlikely that their government would collude with the U.S. government to keep them from being able to proactively keep an invasion from happening in order to be hit first and then respond, as you talk about in the book Chasing Shadows for the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Is it possible that the United States government, as alleged by many, that we knew, or maybe just Dick Cheney and a few others knew, of an impending attack on the World Trade Center and let it happen so to justify a war like with Afghanistan and Iraq?
Ian, I don't think so. I think that were enough warnings and indicators that that attack was going to take place, that what you had is just sheer bureaucratic incompetence that allowed that to occur, predominantly within the dysfunction between the FBI and the CIA. I just don't believe that story. I can say this, that I know agents that work that case, and my old office was involved in that case, and it's just I can't imagine that if we had information to prevent that from occurring, that we did not take every step possible to try to stop that. The intelligence dissemination process is so huge today, Ian, that it would have been very, very difficult to hush something like that up.
I accept that. I just it's interesting how that story just takes different forms and keeps going. John is in Santa Barbara, wildcard line on Coast to Coast for Fred Burton. John?
Oh, Ian, Fred. Now, this Colonel Alon, he was a big Israeli patriot, right?
That's correct.
Well, then how come they couldn't count on him if they would have sent a representative over to explain what the situation is? That he wouldn't have just cooperated without having to kill him.
Wouldn't have played ball.
He wouldn't have.
Yeah. No. I'm saying, yeah, John's to your point, John. I said, yeah. Why wouldn't he have played ball?
Yeah.
Well, I remember this was the wife's theory as to what occurred. That she passed on to the daughters, and that she believed that there was greater evil at play that was taking place behind the scenes to simply muzzle him. I've looked at a tremendous amount of documents surrounding Joe, Colonel Alon. I think that first and foremost, as a patriot and as a war hero, after everything that he had been through, and we didn't touch on it tonight, but he's from a family of Holocaust survivors and had fled to save himself, and most of his family was killed by the Nazis. I don't know what his response would have been. And again, I don't have the ability to ask him that question, but it's unknown if that conversation actually did take place and that his response was something they didn't want to hear.
Interesting point. And again, I will have Fred back sometime in the future when I finish reading the book, because I got about, I think a little over halfway through, or maybe three quarters of the way through, and I really am anxious to get to the ending. So we'll leave it there for now, but we will return to the subject sometime, I promise. Wildcard Line, Karen is in Colorado for Fred Burton on Coast to Coast. Karen?
Good evening, gentlemen. First,
evening.
Excuse laryngitis. Fred, I have a question on domestic terrorism and security. I'm a director of emergency management. We're a small town in Colorado, and we're at the bottom of the food chain when it comes to getting information on threat assessments. And I'm wondering if you might have anything, excuse me, concerning OTMs or other than Mexicans that have that may be crossing the border. I know last year INS arrested approximately 128 of different nationalities that were coming across our southern borders, and I was wondering if you might have any information concerning threat assessments or numbers that are across the border.
Well, first, I'd be more than happy to help you. We have written several analyses on this from papers on the drug flow and the human trafficking into the United States, and a lot of government agencies are using our graphs and maps that affect. I hate to put the burden again back on Coast to Coast, but if you reach out to them and give me your contact information, I'll be more than happy to send you the analysis that we have done on this topic. We actually write a weekly assessment on the cross-border violence and what's taking place, which is that in itself is a whole nother topic. But again, the ability of the gangs to interface with the cartels is very symbiotic, and it is a problem, especially when you're looking at your special interest aliens, your other than Mexicans that are coming across. And again, you're dealing with huge intelligence gaps on this topic. You only know the numbers that you catch. You don't know the numbers that you don't.
I'll ask Gina, if you could, to get Karen's information, contact information, so that Fred Burton can get a hold of her later on with that info. First, Bill is in Augusta, Georgia, on Coast to Coast for Fred Burton. Bill?
Fred, I'll let you off on that convenient excuse about bureaucratic incompetence about the FBI. They did know that we had people from the Arab worlds flying, trying to learn how to fly planes but not learn how to land planes. And that information was held by the FBI. So I'll just let that off.
No. No reason to do that. I think everybody knows that we knew that. The question is, though, and that's not germane to what the question is that Jesse Ventura and others are saying, that Dick Cheney knew and allowed that to happen on a date and a time when they knew this attack was going to take place, and essentially said, stand down, let this happen.
And well, I think the FBI knew that these people were here and it was a failure for them to disseminate the information.
Okay.
Or it was a cover-up, for sure.
All right. Fred, hold on a second. Fred, respond to that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would be happy to address that. I was part and parcel to the origin of all the joint terrorism task forces around the country. A lot of that deals with the internal mindset of the FBI in our pre-9/11 days. Your average case agent just doesn't have the ability to go above his supervisor to do anything at the FBI, literally. And it's a very, very rank structure, organization. Your average police officer, your average street cop, has much more investigative authority than your average FBI agent. Believe me on that. The ability to ask questions of just about anybody. And so when you go back and you look at the Minneapolis case and the Phoenix memo in that case, and then you think about the dysfunction inside of FBI headquarters with the lack of analytical support to connect the infamous dots, so to speak.
Right.
It was always there. I can recall at one point in time at the FBI when that they had one analyst that was covering all radical Palestinian matters for the world, just one. And again, before email, you had hordes of documents that would just be stacked, that it was this poor guy's job to go through as time permitted.
Yeah.
It was just impossible to draw connections.
Looks like the caller dropped, so we'll won't get to that other question. But he was open. I didn't drop him, but I guess he got the answer he's looking for. Greg is in New York on Coast to Coast on a wild card line for Fred Burton, counterterrorism agent, counterterrorism agent of the past, and currently for Stratfor, public organization, a non-governmental organization now. Greg,
hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Just got a question for you, and this is my own opinion. This has to do with layers, domestically, layers of scrutiny in our own about our own government and our own president. As far as he's just to me showing a lot of Muslim tendencies, and he's really dropping the support for Israel. And I'm just wondering, do we have layers looking into our own administration and our own bureaucrats in far as our president and whatnot? Is there anybody
what's a Muslim tendency?
I personally don't think he's supporting our you know, our country, our people. I just think he's talking about Sharia law in all parts of these world. I mean, all parts of our country.
I've never heard the president say we should have Sharia law in the United States. But Fred Burton, your thought on how is the president investigated, and do we have counterterrorism groups that are out there looking into senators and congressmen and other people that show Muslim tendencies?
The internal background investigation process, each government agency does their own. CIA does theirs of their person, State Department, and so forth. The FBI does all the cabinet-level officials, to include the president, and the national security scope of that investigation is pretty robust. And the challenge becomes, and it's actually a very interesting question if I flip it for a minute, is this, that you can elect a official and then that person be placed in Congress or Senate or whatever. The background investigation process is one that is almost then inverted, meaning if you and I, Ian, and your caller apply for government jobs, we are screened firsthand before we're allowed through the front door. An elected official, it happens the other way around. So, in essence, your investigation process is almost inverted.
Just another complication of an open democracy.
Correct, and that becomes at times challenging if you're doing the investigation. I know that from firsthand experience, there have been certain appointees that, you know, have been disqualified, like for various, assistant secretary type positions or whatever,
right?
Because of derogatory information that has surfaced as a result of the scope of their background investigation.
I have a quick question. It's got to be quick because there's so many people here. Has there ever actually been a Manchurian candidate that has been uncovered either domestically or, you know, through other international groups that say, hey, look out for so-and-so. We believe that this person has become sort of roboticized in their function and could someday wreak havoc on the U.S. from the inside?
Not that I'm aware of. I've never worked any specific cases to that effect. I'm not saying they don't exist. There are wheels within wheels when you're talking about government agencies, and it's all geared towards, classified compartments.
Sure.
So I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just not personally aware of any cases that I've worked.
Brent in Riverside, California, on Coast to Coast. We'll get to as many calls as we can before we have to say goodnight to Fred Burton. Go ahead, Brent.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a former narcotics cop, and right before I left my agency, I received a briefing concerning Middle East terrorist groups and South American drug cartels kind of doing a territory war down in South America and Mexico. And I was wondering if there was any U.S. involvement in that and what it might be.
Well, first, thank you for your service to our country. A tough job, as I know. Yes, we are very active in Latin and Central America, predominantly the DEA, and some of our counter-narcotics efforts there. Are we being successful? It boils down to, how are you going to define success? Are we stopping the flow of drugs into the United States? Certainly not. Certainly the consumption issue is one that the Mexican government consistently brings up. But if you look at the pipeline from Mexico into the United States, it appears to be endless. So this is just not a Mexico-U.S. problem. You have to get into Central and Latin America. DEA has a tough job. They're pushing a boulder up a hill, and they have a tremendous number of assets committed to Afghanistan, which is also political as it pertains to that. So if you could somehow rein in and get some of those assets back from Afghanistan and reprogram them into the efforts in Mexico, we could probably do a little better job, I think.
Robert is in Los Angeles on Coast to Coast in the time that we have for Fred Burton. Go ahead, Robert.
Ian, thank you very much, Gina. Thank you for taking my call. Fred, how are you? My question is, my wife and I have been married for 6 years, and we're going to have to go to Mexico in about 6 months. We're finishing up her immigration papers, and my wife has to depart from the United States for a certain amount of time, and we have to go to Ciudad Juarez for the consulate for our initial meeting with USCIS, and I'm very concerned about when we do go there about staying alive and staying safe. What would you suggest as far as security measures, hiring a contract company or hiring someone to protect us while we're down there?
Part of the challenge with that and Ciudad Juarez is probably the most violent city in Mexico today, is that you have to be careful of who you hire, that they're not going to simply be used to hand you over to the Juarez cartel. I have a comment in my book, Chasing Shadows, that sometimes in the counterterrorism business, the only decision you have is a bad one.
Yeah.
I would try to look at perhaps other alternatives. For example, is there a way to work with the Mexican consulate in El Paso versus having to go to Ciudad Juarez?
Very interesting and probably a tough answer for Robert, because it sounds like they would be happy to take that if they could get that out. Maybe they can. Otherwise, choose carefully. And thank you. I wish you the best of success for the new book. You're always a great guest. Fred Burton, Chasing Shadows, A Special Agent's Lifelong Hunt to Bring a Cold War Assassin to Justice, drops on Tuesday. And we'll have you back sometime in the first hour to do a recap on this when I get a chance to finish the exciting ending. So thank you so much, and good luck to you this week. Deus te amat, but I do too.